Hi, welcome to Pete's Pub. I'm your host, Pete Kemmer. This is episode 15, release date Sunday, September 28th, 2025. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 27th of September, despite having a nasty cold. I was just going to post a rerun, but since hardly anyone even listens to this podcast at all, it seems silly to expect anyone to listen to an older episode, especially when you can just go back into the feed and listen to any one of them you'd like. Besides, I have a couple of things I wanted to say today. I'll be wrapping up what I'm calling Season 1 of Pete's Pub, as I have some things coming up in real life that might prohibit me from recording a podcast for a little while. I also kind of jumped in with both feet here, and I should have built up a number of shows before starting to release them, which makes it more difficult for me to make sure there's a fresh new episode every Sunday. In Season 2, the plan is to get further ahead like everyone else in podcasting seems to be. Okay, so this episode is intended to be encouraging or maybe even a little inspirational. I don't know who needs to hear it, but I feel I want to say it, because if there's even one person it helps in any way, it's worth the time. I want to start with a little background from when I was a kid, so you get an idea of where this is all coming from and where it ends up. My dad was an alcoholic until I was a little over 15 years old. He was a nasty, angry drunk, and I grew up pretty much in fear of him giving me a good beating and without a role model. My mom, God bless her, did everything she could to keep the family together, but that's all she could manage to do. My childhood was forever corrupted. I had terrible self-esteem. I had no confidence in any of my abilities, how I looked. I was pretty much completely paralyzed with shyness when it came to girls, and I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do with my life. My only escape was with my friends, and for a while with drugs. School was another important escape for me, and it helped fill in some of the empty and damaged parts of my psyche. Third grade was pretty much the first time in my whole life that someone noticed that I might have some potential. The Allentown School District had started a new program called Opportunity School, where third graders perceived to have potential were tested to see if they might be candidates for more aggressive advanced teaching. Things like a second language starting in fourth grade, typing class, advanced math, science, social studies, and English classes, heavier reading loads. I was selected for this testing, and upon completing it, I was recommended for Opportunity School. My dad didn't really care much except that I'd be bussed over to the school instead of going across the street, but Mom was thrilled. I was surprisingly excited, and I accepted the opportunity despite my horrible self-esteem. After all, someone else had vetted me, and I was confident I'd do well. First time I ever felt confident about anything. And fourth, fifth, and sixth grades were primarily a positive experience for me. I always loved reading. I used to spend summers going to the library, and I used to have these summer reading contests, and I used to excel at those. I read hundreds of books over the summers. The more challenging reading I was required to do was right up my alley. Learning to type very fast with a very low error rate helped me a lot when I got into computers later on, as I was able to whip up code, spreadsheets, Word documents, and much more quickly and effectively, more so than many of my peers. I wasn't a big math person, and I still think that math past algebra and maybe some basic trig should be an elective, but at least I was solid in those areas. Social studies was fine, although I believe to this day that ethics should be taught in schools and not just Western civilization and the like. And science was my favorite. The study of the universe around me, the process of it all was just fascinating to me, and I really enjoyed science. The whole Opportunity School experience was the first time in my life that I realized that I was capable of doing more than I thought I could do. But it was a lesson I'd have to learn several times again before it stuck with me. Junior high school was especially rough for me, grades 7 and 9. The paralyzing shyness I had around girls was front and center, as those girls were starting to look more and more appealing around this time. I played some sports, but I was only average, as the people who were serious about sports had been playing them for many years already. And there was also this social sports club thing going on. If you weren't part of the club already, you weren't going to be in it now. This happened to me in basketball, my favorite and best sport, and it soured me to the point where I just stopped playing competitively altogether. I always enjoyed singing, so I joined the choir, and I had a decent experience there. Turns out I can hold a tune, and I do it loudly. But I still felt inadequate in junior high. Because of the geographics of the Allentown school system at the time, I attended a school with primarily kids from well-to-do families living in the west end of Allentown. I, on the other hand, came from the north end, and my family had no money, never went on vacation. I got virtually nothing for my birthday or Christmas, and I was really limited on things as basic as clothing to wear. On top of that, in 10th grade, I lost virtually all of my school friends when I began high school on the east side of Allentown, again due to the weird boundaries of the Allentown school district. So high school started out with a race riot in 10th grade. That's enough to shock your confidence. I remember cafeteria tables and chairs being thrown around. It was a real mental mess for me because I never really cared if someone was white, black, or whatever. And second, my junior high was primarily white, so I didn't have a clue as to the level of racism in society. Sadly, it seems that it's still pretty bad, but I digress. I joined the choir, and only for the second time in my life, felt that I was exceptional in some way. Peter Carpenter, or Mr. C as we all referred to him, selected me to be in Varsity Voices, a small elite group of singers who were given some very challenging and rewarding music to sing. This was life-changing for me because out of the 100-plus people in choir, there were only about 16 or so in Varsity Voices. And I, this nobody-new kid, was one of them. I relished my time in choir and Varsity Voices, and I made a lot of new friends in the music department. I proved to myself I could do something exceptional despite my lack of self-confidence, and I was surprisingly comfortable performing on stage, despite my overwhelming shyness and otherwise lack of self-esteem. It was another escape for me, and I was hooked and determined to get better at all of it. So then I joined the drama department, or group, if you want to call it, in high school, and I had a dancing role with someone in a show called Irene. So musical theater became an interest. And again, despite being shy and sometimes painfully so, I didn't seem to have a problem being on stage and doing things I never did before. I mean, I was hitting marks, I was dancing, I had to learn the dances, they were all choreographed, we had a professional choreographer, and it was a great time. So singing and dancing and acting, and it just got in my blood at the time. The next year was even more so. I was sitting down and I was going to try out for the barbershop quartet in the school musical, The Music Man. So I did the tryout and the barbershop quartet. I figured it was a great way of getting into the show, not working too hard because at my heart, I was pretty lazy. And going through some tough times outside of school, which clouded my judgment. But I figured they're scene stealers and I could get on and we could do the three songs and steal some scenes and get off. So I sat down after the tryout, and then Peter Carpenter's wife came up behind me. And as they were auditioning for the lead in the show, she pulled the back of my hair. And she whispered into my ear as she bent over, she says, "You get up there and you try out for this. You would be great in this." And I was like, "Huh?" But I mean, I said, "Okay, I will." So I got up and I had not prepared anything, just went ahead and did the scene. And wouldn't you know it, I got the part. So I had a really good time doing that show. Was I perfect in that show? No. Was I some burgeoning actor? You know, was I going to have a career in acting? No, not at all. This was a school play, And I even botched up the main song one night, and thank goodness Pete Carpenter, Mr. C, got the pit orchestra to jump ahead as I skipped the whole verse of the song. So most people didn't even notice it. It was pretty remarkable. But I had a great time, and overall, I did a pretty good job. I really enjoyed the experience, except for the very end. It was a big disappointment at the very end, but that's a story for another day. And I was elected president of the choir by my peers, and that was another reinforcement of the fact that I was actually doing things that were great. I mean, I loved my choir. I loved singing. I was a big supporter of everything, and I think people thought that I was a good representative for the choir. And unfortunately, even that didn't work out, because when I got to my senior year, my out-of-school problems, they really messed me up, and Pete Carpenter, God bless him, pulled me aside, and in order to get me to realize what I was doing to myself, he took the choir presidency away from me. And at the time, I hated him. I just hated him. But as time went on, and it didn't take too long, I realized that he was trying to shake me up and get me to realize that I had to focus. I had to stop doing the things that were preventing me from achieving good things in my life. He really cared about me, and the only way left to him to get through to me was to take something away from me that was really important. And to this day, and as I do this podcast, I'm 64 and a half years old. I love that man. He was a father figure to me in a way that my own father never was. He set an example for me that I could follow. I actually had a role model. Do I agree with everything that Peter Carpenter agrees with or finds important? No, I don't. You know, I like drummers. He doesn't like drummers. He says music doesn't need drumming. But little stuff aside, Pete Carpenter helped me become so much better of a person and a man and a husband and a father and a grandfather and a confident performer, so much more than I would have without him, and I'll be eternally grateful for him. So after that, I continued on. I did some community theater. I got the lead in Oklahoma for a company called Municipal Opera Company, or MNOPCO, in the Allentown area. And we had a good production of Oklahoma, West Side Story, and there were some other ones too. But then real life kind of creeped in. I needed to get a job. I wasn't going to college. So I moved to Connecticut without a clue as to what I was going to do. I had a friend up there who would put me up until I got a job. And that's exactly what happened. I found this job. I ended up starting out making almost no money. But it was an opportunity to learn a career, because I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. Still, here I am. And 21 years old at this point, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. So I started a quality career. I learned all the jobs. I learned all the products. I learned all the processes. I wrote all the work instructions for this place, and I worked my way up through that company over the first couple of years. I became a quality supervisor, then a quality manager, and then the new product manager. Same time, I got a whole bunch of computer experience. This is when computers were first coming out. I was a Commodore 64 guy, and I was able to take a Commodore 64 computer and the horrible hot floppy disk drive, the 1541 disk drive, and ended up using it in an innovative way there at the company. We had some auto insertion equipment for circuit boards and some semi-automatic equipment. And I was able to use the computer in lieu of an old-fashioned teletype machine. So basically, you could load and save programs and run them on these large, expensive pieces of equipment. And so it would pick and place and crimp and solder. And in this way, I was able to add some real value to the company. And I know that the owner of the company was really impressed, and I was kind of shocked myself that I was able to do this. So I wrote a computer program using the shell of a terminal program and turned it into something that was really useful for that company for quite a bit of time. Also started a bulletin board service. It was the first Commodore 64-based bulletin board service in New England called Cesaria BBS. We had a couple hundred members. This is back in the day where you used a modem and you had to dial in and you heard the squealing and then you got a connection. And it was in the early days of computers. And we had quite the community going. You know, marriages were made and broken and friendships and, oh my goodness, it was a whole thing. And we actually had social events where we got together, which was interesting. But again, something that didn't exist. And I somehow, you know, you allow for the possibility of things and then you work hard at it and there you go. You know, you manifest your own destiny in many ways. So I moved back to Pennsylvania shortly after the 80s, and then I joined a band. It was something I always wanted to do. I've been playing bass the whole time, off and on, and I joined a band with a couple of really hotshot guitarists who still are hotshot guitarists. In fact, I am now playing with one of them again after 35 years. A really good drummer and plug-and-play a singer. You know, we had a couple of different singers back then. We did really well. We were, I have some stuff on YouTube. The band is called Mecca, and there's some VHS copies of what we did that we digitized, and I put up a number of our songs on YouTube. We were a good bar band, and good enough to open for the world-class guitarist Greg Howe out of Easton. By the way, if you haven't heard Greg Howe play, you really should listen to Greg Howe play. He's actually on the latest album from an artist called Darwin, D-A-R, capital W-I-N. And his solos are just astonishing. He's an astonishing player. I continued my quality career. I met and married a former Pottstown cheerleading captain and homecoming queen. That was an absurdity in my life. I mean, how did I do that? I don't know. I allowed for the possibility. I mean, I was just very, I still am. You know, I was always, not as much as I was, of course, in high school, because I'm older now and who cares, right? back in the old days, I was so paralyzed with fear and shyness. And I wasn't really even looking for anyone, and I've talked about the story before, so I won't go through the whole thing. But, yeah, I mean, if I can end up dating and marrying a cheerleading captain and homecoming queen, who can't? I worked my way up the corporate ladder at this company. I became the director of quality information technology for a $250 million company before they relocated to Michigan. And I even set up their first corporate headquarters from a tech standpoint. And that whole technology thing was because I took a leap of faith in myself and my abilities and became the site director for GameSpy's Planet Unreal. And then later on, starting up my own startup with a group of friends, technical people, and you can hear more about that in the Mal Havoc, or Jason Nugent is his real name, podcast. And that experience was what I leveraged into this dual directorship. I was the director of quality, and when the director of information technology retired for medical reasons, I went to the president and said, you know, I can do this job. And he took a look at my qualifications and what I had done outside of work, and he was impressed enough to give me a shot at it. That was a big deal to me because things were really happening at my company at that time. They were growing from what was initially a 40-some million-dollar company to a $250 million-plus company. And I saw them through that growth. And again, allowing for the possibility of success, you know, having the fortitude to just put aside my own fears and misgivings about whether I was qualified, you know, getting rid of imposter syndrome, you know, I decided, you know, I can do this. I can do this. Surround yourself with good people, work hard, the whole deal. And it worked out great, you know, for the time I was there. After I left that company, I continued on for several years. I ended up my career with the last 4 years at a company that made products for medical devices. Again, I had no experience with medical devices, but again, you just take the same talents, the same rules, the same skill set, your toolbox, and you can apply quality to any industry. Learn the industry when you get there, and then apply the tools. It was a very satisfying job. It was a great way to close out my working career, and I'm thankful to my boss Jason for giving me the opportunity, and his father as well, who founded that company. So I retired from there at 61 in order to be available to babysit my first grandson, Liam. And that's a whole thing too, because when my sons were young, I didn't really raise them. You know, their mom raised them. I was busy working and traveling and doing all sorts of things. I got to see them a lot. And yeah, I changed the diaper here and there. But spending all day with a baby and then an infant and then a toddler, I mean, that was all new to me. But, you know, again, put your fears aside and go for it. And it was so worth it. Anyone who knows me now knows how much I love my grandsons. It's just crazy. So I got right to work in that bucket list, which included the babysitting gig and putting everything I could into Liam and finding and joining a gigging band again after 30 years. I had played with that band for 2 years, and I'm very sure I helped them sound better. I mean, even helped get them into Music Fest. Even looking at it now, I was surprised at how at ease I was, and I still am on stage, considering where I came from, where I was when all of this started. Just before I left that band, my second grandson, Parker, was born. And while I haven't been able to spend as much time strictly with him as I did with Liam in the early days, I already established a good relationship with him, and he seems to have a great time with his pop-pop. As Liam gets older and doesn't want to or need to spend as much time with me, I'm hopeful to get to use some of that time one-on-one with Parker. I also decided to take one, perhaps last, crack at finding a band to play with, so I put up a Craigslist ad. It's like, okay, allow for the possibility, right? Well, wouldn't you know it, but one of the two founders of Smith Compound Band reached out to me and said they were looking for a new bass player. He mentioned that there was a keyboardist trying out the next night, and he asked if I'd be interested in trying out as well. Well, I didn't know most of the songs on his proposed tryout list, but again, I decided to allow for the possibility for success. So I learned about six of them overnight and through the next morning, and then I showed up at the tryout that night. And it went well, and the band voted to bring me on board. After that, and a week of family vacation, I had to learn about 70 songs in total over the next 3 weeks or so. No small task, as these guys were not playing only simple songs. Some of them were and are very challenging and completely new to me. Compounding the difficulty, they were transitioning from old songs to more danceable ones for the band going forward under a new name. And again, I surprised myself by just digging in and learning them. Our first gig together went fine, especially for a first gig. That was a couple of weeks ago. Tonight's our second gig, and what ends up being the last one for what's known as the Smith Compound Band, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's nice to play with a professional group of people who all just want to play well and have fun doing it. And my special bonus is I get to play with my old bandmate, Jack Wiand. And if you haven't heard Jack play, you really should get out there and hear him and hear us play. He's kind of a wizard on the guitar. He just knows what to play, and he's a real pro. And that's not to put down our other guitarist, our lead guitarist, Anthony, who's an exceptional player in his own right. I'm just getting to know Anthony a little bit musically, and I'm really impressed with him as well. So I'm excited about the future of this band. I'm hoping that this new direction that Tracy, our drummer and leader, is taking this thing is going to be a lot of fun for everybody. Now, if I would not have pushed myself to allow for the possibility that maybe, just maybe, I could overcome the obstacles in my life, I never would have achieved half of what I've managed to put together without a college education. I truly believe that if you choose your goals, set your mind to achieving them, work hard, don't waste any time worrying about keeping up with the Joneses or feeling sorry for yourself, and treat the failures along the way, yes, you will fail along the way, as opportunities to learn from, and then use those lessons to move forward, you can accomplish so much in life and live a happy life. Allow for the possibility for success. That's the primary message I want to leave you with, because if I could do any of the things I talked about today, taking a horrible start to life and making a wonderful life for myself, well, anyone can do it. And that wraps up another episode of Pete's Pub and season one of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you have any comments about it or suggestions for the podcast, or you'd like to be a future guest on the show, you can drop me an email at peter.kemmerer@gmail.com. I'm always interested to talk with people with stories to tell, even if they're about me. The theme music for Pete's Pub is Hard Fought Victory by Chris Martin and Jeff Harvey at www.purple-planet.com. Until next time, remember, if you can be a bass player, be one. If you can't, date or marry one. See you soon. Bye-bye.